Hebrews. Chapter 2. I think we are in verse 5. Would someone like to read? Let's do 5 through 9. Yes. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Chapter, and one of them I want to talk about is in verse 7, but before I get to that, I want to talk about who's the topic of this passage? Who is the topic? Who is he talking about in this passage?
Subject, Jesus.
Yes. Okay, so the subject is Jesus. So in verse 5, what is it that we see about Jesus? For it is not to angels that God subjected the world to come, which we are speaking. This is kind of hyperbole. He's talking about something that either happened or is going to happen. And so when it comes to Jesus, this is really in reference to his power. So we can see that since we've kind of already talked about this. What did we talk about last week? We talked about how God created Jesus for the purpose of being greater than angels. And so when he says, "For it was not to angels that God subjected the world to come, for which we are speaking," where was I going with this? He's kind of using a common Jewish saying. So part of it is I don't really feel like it translates very well in English. The best way I can say this is, do you guys remember that part in John where Jesus turns the water into wine, and his mother goes to him and she asks him for help? He says to her, "What am I to you?" It's kind of like a Hebrew expression. It just doesn't translate very well in English. And I feel like this is one of those passages that doesn't translate well into English. The thing is, I don't really have a good way to put it. And so, I, other than to tell you that I think he's speaking of future events. Or he's speaking, I think it's called in the perfect tense. Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to get that out of the way because I had no way to explain that better than what I just did. So if you have any questions about that, I refer to you to John, I refer to you to Mark, because I'm just going to drop that. But what I really want to talk about is in verse 7 is this phrase he says, "You made him." Now, this, a lot of people think that he's talking about when he says you made him, he's not necessarily, they're not necessarily talking about Jesus. They're talking about man in general. Because if we accept, the premise here is we accept that Jesus is part of God, right? So if Jesus is part of God, is it possible for God to make Jesus? Or is Jesus always there with God? Mm-hmm. That's actually where I was going to go with this. Yeah, I think what he's talking about here is the changing of Jesus from his divine form to his human form. I wanted to go along more with this because he says here, "What is man that you are mindful of him?" So there, he's obviously not speaking about Jesus. Jesus refers to himself as what? Son of Man. Why does he refer to himself as the Son of Man? I'm asking you to remember your gospel. So we go back all the way to when Jesus is in the temple and they hand him a scroll and he reads the scroll from Isaiah and he basically says, this is them talking about me. And so what do they decide to do? They decide to kill him. They're going to throw him off a cliff. And the Bible tells us he just kind of walks through the passage, or walks through the people. Every time I think of that, I think of those old cartoons where you have everyone dogpiling on someone, and the guy they're all dogpiling on just kind of slips away. But it is at that point in the story that Jesus starts referring to himself as the Son of Man. And it is, I think it is mostly to as a way to cause less controversy. But also a way to show humility.
And so it's important that we remember that he had a duality that no other individual has ever had in both God and human.
Fair. Subjective. Fair is subjective, but I think you're right. Accurate is probably a better term. But even still, as the Son of Man, he had authority, right? And what do we know about his authority? Mm-hmm. And what could he do with that as authority? Mm-hmm. And we get the impression that he did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've heard people use that passage to say that's why you don't need to be baptized. And my response is, well, if Jesus stands before you and says you're forgiven, then I think you can kind of bypass that process. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we don't. But I can infer from context of who Jesus is that even if it wasn't, I mean, Jesus obviously had that power. But when Jesus moves forward into his glory, we're pretty much left to our own, which is why we have baptism. Baptism, I think, is for us. But besides his ability to forgive sins, he also had the ability to raise people from the dead, turn water to wine, create food out of nothing, heal, and he healed lots of people. I referenced 2 weeks ago the 7 miracles in John. And so this is his power. But it also says even then that he could have called the angels to save him from the cross. But he chose not to because the events of the cross had to happen. So we know at least even then that Jesus was greater than the angels. You have made him for a little while lower than the angels, and you have lower than the angels, lower not necessarily in status, but in position. I think that's referring to his time on earth. And you have crowned him with glory and honor, exalting him, as Paul says, which we read in Philippians. Putting everything in subjection under his feet. And so, what is the author trying to get at here? Basically says that in verse 8. Yeah. The world isn't subject... Sorry, say that again. Self-subject. Okay. I heard what you said, and then I started saying the opposite. Yeah. Well, I think he's talking the future, but because it's an idiom, I also think he's talking about the present. This might actually be one of the times where I think Greek would be useful, because it would be a lot easier to see in the Greek. If I had to guess, I would guess that this is a perfect that's being used. But most of us don't have that benefit, and I don't know if it's even going to be that helpful here. I'd say everything now and will be and has been, probably, no, he doesn't say that, has been subjected under Jesus. So angels are nothing compared to Jesus. And they're pretty powerful, as we see. We don't see them, we don't really see them a lot in the Bible. We have a very good idea of what angels look like, we have a very good idea of what angels are like because of popular cultural references, but maybe not so through their presence in the Bible. I think in the New Testament, they only show up twice. No, 3 times. Once with Zechariah, once with Mary, and once it says... while he was in the wilderness. But other than that, when we normally see them, we see them in different forms. We don't see them in their angelic form. We see them like as a human, what's his name? Israel, Jacob, says he wrestled with God, or an angel, depending on the text, the way you read it. In the Hebrew, it says angel. The idea is he wrestled with God. It says that an angel appeared to the Israelites in the form of what I'm going to talk about today, in the form of a cloud or a pillar of fire in the time of Moses. Isaiah describes them as having six wings. So they have power as well. And like Christ's power, their power does come from God. And you know, their power is much greater than ours as humans. And so that's why, because of their power and because of where they come from, we see them as a very, very high status. And I think that's probably why he's addressing this issue, is you have these angels, and people see the angels as greater than God, or sorry, not greater than God, greater than Christ. And that's why that he's going back to here. I'm just talking in circles. I'm sorry. Let's continue. You have a question? Yes. He says they had six wings. They used two to fly with, two to cover their feet. And I don't remember what they did with the other two. I think they used the other two to cover their body. Hold on a second. I think it's in Isaiah chapter 6. Each had six wings, two he covered his face, and two he covered his feet, and two he flew. Yeah, verse 2. Much different than what you would think of when you think of angels, huh? Yeah? So, when we think of angels, we probably think of someone wearing all white, pair of wings, and probably has a halo. But this is the most descriptive passage of what an angel actually looks like. Well, sure, and that's kind of what I was saying earlier is while this is what Isaiah says the angel looks like, there are other passages that use the word angel to describe something else. Like I said, with Jacob, when he wrestles with God, that was an angel. And he assumed it was a man. There's another time that angels are described in the gospel stories, and that is in the tomb. And it doesn't really tell us anything for about their appearance, but at first they assume that they're people. So I think angels have the ability to change their appearance. But I don't really think that's what is something important here. It's a neat thing to know, though. All right. So everything is subjected under Jesus, and nothing is out of his control, meaning the all-powerful God can and do what he's going to do. And I like this next part. We do not yet see everything in subjection to him, but we see him who for a little while has been made lower than the angels, namely Jesus, crowned with the glory and honor because of the suffering of death, so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. So again, he's talking about past events as future events. But I like this passage because it really shows to the short-sighted nature of humans. We have this idea of what Jesus is like or what he's supposed to be like, but we really don't see it. And I think because we don't see it is often why we disobey it or choose to ignore it. I think most people in this room are a parent, right? Or have been a parent? Okay, I'm sorry. Well, you've been a teacher, so I think that's good enough. When you're in the presence of your children, do they blatantly disobey you? Okay. Sometimes. But for the most part, they don't, right? I'm guessing for most of the stuff that they do is when you're... The bad stuff that they do is when you're not watching. Would you say that's accurate? Or at least when they think you're not watching. Philip was told to water the plants on Saturday. And I sat there and I watched him play with the hose while he was shooting water into the air, and then it looked like he was going to like stand in front of it so it would rain down on him, which was rather stupid. And then finally I said, "Philip, what are you doing?" He turns around, he looks at me, and he stops for a second. He goes, "I'm watering the plants." And I go, "Really? That's what you're going with?" And I told him to turn off the hose, and then I brought him inside, and I got my spoon. I wanted to see if I can get him to tell me the truth. And I go, "What were you doing?" And he goes, "I was playing in the water." And I go, "Why did you tell me you were watering the plants?" He goes, "I don't know." And I go, "Yes, you do. Think it through. You thought you could get away with it." Now, I was watching him for a few minutes. He was not watering the plants in any of that time. Yes, I'm sure a good lawyer. Yeah. He was having fun. But he blatantly lied. I wasn't upset that he was... Maybe in his mind, but he knew he was wrong, because as soon as he turned around, he didn't tell me what he was doing. He told me what he was supposed to be doing. So we had a talk about integrity. But I generally think that the same kind of thing is what's happening here, is because we don't see Jesus. And we don't see God, at least not the way that I physically see you. I think it's easier for us to forget of what it means to be subjected under them. You have a question, or are you just yawning?
No, I don't have a question. I'm not yawning.
Oh. Okay. Did you just lawyer me right there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, I'm guessing. And I don't think what I'm saying necessarily is invalidated by what you're saying or vice versa. But I think I'm a big subscriber to Occam's Razor. Occam's Razor. You know, have you guys heard this? Occam's Razor postulates that the simplest answer is normally the correct one. And I find that...
And on, when you go back to read Psalm 8, verse 5, and Hebrew references exactly what from the Psalm.
Yes, correct.
Where it isn't talking so much about Jesus literally,
mm-hmm.
but it could be postulated, as you just used that word, that the imagery is also about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely correct. But then again, we know that God made man in his own likeness, whatever that means, and gave him dominion
mm-hmm.
over what he did in
him. Okay. Can you speak up? Oh, okay, yeah. Because they say, let us create man in our own image. Sure.
That also is an indicator to us in our current understanding the language of the plurality of the Godhead.
Yeah. Okay. I think I lost something here. Because I feel like I'm talking about one thing and you guys are talking about another one. And I'm not sure how we got there.
Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I was talking more about the overall theme because the Hebrews is mostly about these people that are turning away from Jesus to other things, and I think part of that is they're turning because it's in their human nature. Or it's in our human nature to turn away from our authority. Or in this case, if we see Jesus as the authority. But I get what you guys are saying.
Verse 1, that's
yeah.
Exactly what the warning
mm-hmm.
What we have heard so that we do not drift away.
Mm-hmm.
It's why somebody was drifting away.
Mm-hmm. So then we read a little bit about his glory and crown and what he's basically going to have to suffer. So we know we're definitely talking about Jesus at this point because Jesus does suffer. Or it says he might taste death for everyone. And I guess we're done. So a very interesting topic today. I think I'm going to have to start outlining my class. I think that will help me gather my thoughts better. So, thank you guys for your time today. I'm going to do something different next week, and I'm not sure what that's going to be, but I feel like what I'm doing now isn't working for me. Thank you for your patience. Sorry? Oh, well, I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So let's close out in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank